Welcome to Thursday's edition of Main Street here on Prairie Public. We are glad that you are with us today. I'm Craig Blumenschein, and coming up in just a bit, News Director Dave Thompson and I will review this week's news in the state, and we'll learn about blubber hands and other things at the North Dakota Gateway to Science. And Chuck Lura in A Natural North Dakota reports to be on the lookout for the majestic snowy owls perched across North Dakota this winter. We begin Main Street today by taking a closer look at an issue that sits at the heart of public trust: how we govern ethics in government. Right now, the North Dakota Ethics Commission is facing two critical challenges: a deadlock over whether Commissioner Murray Sagsveen should continue serving beyond his expired term, and a debate over whether the commission should penalize individuals who file complaints in bad faith, possibly for political gain. Joining us to discuss is North Dakota Monitor reporter Jacob Orledge, who has been closely following the selection committee's disputes, the shifting legal interpretations, and the broader question: who holds power over ethics here in North Dakota, and how should it be used? Jacob, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me on, Craig.
Jacob, for listeners who have not have followed every meeting, can you briefly explain first the current stalemate involving Commissioner Murray Sagsveen and why it matters?
Sure. So this process began with three vacancies on the North Dakota Ethics Commission earlier this fall. Two of those vacancies have since been filled. Pam Sharp, a former OMB director in state government, was appointed to one slot, and Mark Western, a Fargo attorney, was appointed to the second slot. Now, the deadlock comes in on the third vacancy. Governor Kelly Armstrong has steadfastly refused to reappoint Murray Sagsveen, an incumbent ethics commissioner, to a full four-year term, whereas the other two members of the selection committee, Senate Majority Leader David Hogue and Senate Minority Leader Kathy Hogan, have steadfastly maintained that they want to reappoint Murray Sagsveen to another four-year term.
So we have a deadlock.
Yes. The key point here is that the Ethics Commission was created by a constitutional amendment approved by voters in 2018. This constitutional amendment, which is now Article 14 of the North Dakota State Constitution, requires that all appointments to the Ethics Commission be made by a consensus of those three office holders. So it's not a majority vote. All three have to agree unanimously on any appointment.
Well, others have cited this longstanding practice allowing commissioners to stay until a replacement is named. There now seems to me some legal and really constitutional tensions here. Is that accurate?
I think that could be a fair characterization. How this process began was Murray Sagsveen's term on the Ethics Commission expired on August 31st earlier this year. But he continued to serve on the Ethics Commission in the months since then, pending the outcome of the selection committee's process. Yesterday, during the most recent selection committee meeting, Governor Kelly Armstrong stated that Murray Sagsveen no longer had his support to continue serving. Governor Armstrong's argument was that in order for somebody to continue serving on a board like the Ethics Commission past their expired term, they required the consent of the appointing authority. The appointing authority in this case being the three-member selection committee. And the governor argued that that consent has to be a consensus of the three members. So when Governor Armstrong withdrew his part in that three-part consensus, he said yesterday Sagsveen no longer has that consensus to continue serving on the Ethics Commission. Now, that conflicts with the Ethics Commission's own policy, an internal policy, which they say reflects common law and precedent here in North Dakota. That policy is that incumbent commissioners continue to serve until a replacement is named.
Is there any court history that tells us whether or not that could hold up?
So I am not personally a legal scholar or an attorney, so I cannot fully answer that question. What I can say is that the North Dakota Ethics Commission has prepared a memo in recent days summarizing their own legal research into that question. And they identified several court cases from the early 20th century here in North Dakota, from the North Dakota Supreme Court, as well as several common law resources. And their conclusion was that their policy is legal and accurate.
Seems to me this is more than just a technical debate, and it reveals deeper questions really about who controls the Ethics Commission. Is it legislators? Is it the governor? Or is it the commission itself? What do you think about that question?
I think that is a big question that the North Dakota state government is still in the process of answering. This is a relatively new entity. The Ethics Commission was only created in 2018 when voters approved that constitutional amendment. They were only established in 2019 after the 2019 legislative session and the first appointments were made. The Ethics Commission spent its first several years coming to grips with what its mission would be, what its job is, how it's supposed to accomplish those jobs, and processes for accomplishing those missions. But they are not the only stakeholder in this. There's also the legislature to consider, which is responsible for setting the Ethics Commission's budget and has passed several laws that legislators say facilitate the Ethics Commission's processes. And there is also the executive branch to consider. There have been some miscommunications and some disagreements regarding the scope and extent of the Ethics Commission's authority between the Ethics Commission and several executive branch officials. So I would say that who is in charge of the Ethics Commission or who determines what the mission of the Ethics Commission is, that is still an open question that state government as a whole is trying to come to grips with.
Can you tell us why Governor Armstrong does not want Commissioner Murray Segsveen on the Ethics Commission?
Governor Armstrong has cited several reasons. And if you want to read Governor Armstrong's remarks, we've published several articles on the NorthDakotaMonitor.com website. And you can go back and read our reporting on his position. But in a quick summary, Governor Armstrong has cited the need for a quote-unquote reset of the Ethics Commission as perhaps the largest reason for why he does not want to reappoint Murray Segsveen. Part of that is he objects to a questionnaire that Murray Segsveen filled out. All the candidates for Ethics Commission vacancies who applied during this process had to fill out a questionnaire. And in response to one of those questions, Segsveen stated that he believed several laws the legislature had passed relating to the Ethics Commission were unconstitutional. Governor Armstrong has taken issue with that answer. He strongly disagrees with that characterization of the legislature's actions. And the governor has also cited the advisory opinions the Ethics Commission has issued over the course of this year. One in particular has caught his attention and has received objections from the governor. And Segsveen's presence on the commission during that advisory opinion process has apparently played a part in the governor's objection to reappointing Segsveen.
So I have two political and practical implication questions for you, Jacob. I believe you've reported that Governor Armstrong has suggested litigating would be a colossal misapplication of resources. But what happens if the commission ignores his letter that you gave to us yesterday and continues operating as usual?
Well, I'm not an attorney. I'm afraid that I can't answer that. And I have not reported extensively on that what if, that hypothetical. We will see what the Ethics Commission and what Murray Segsveen chooses to do. And we will see what comes of that. I can tell you that the governor stated during yesterday's meeting that anyone who disagrees with his interpretation of that lack of consensus essentially has two options. They can request a legal opinion from the Attorney General, or they can litigate it. And later on in the meeting, he also floated a third option. They could ignore his opinion. We will see what the stakeholders involved choose to do.
Another question, and perhaps you can't answer this either, but are there concerns now that any decision that the commission makes going forward with SEGS being involved, still participating, is later at legal risk and could be challenged or even invalidated?
That is a concern that Governor Armstrong briefly brought up during yesterday's meeting. Again, I'm not an attorney, and I wouldn't want to hazard any official opinion on that.
I want to talk about the reporting about when people register complaints in bad faith. There's a proposal then that came forward, and there are examples of the system being weaponized, if you will, as some officials put it. Tell me about that debate.
So this is a debate that has been going on for a long time, and it speaks to one of the core concerns that many legislators have had ever since the Ethics Commission was created, back when legislators first debated the issue in the 2019 legislative session. And that's that frivolous complaints can be filed with the Ethics Commission as a way of playing politics rather than seeking good governance. In recent months, this was also a topic of discussion during the 2025 legislative session. Several lawmakers brought up the concern that the commission was being weaponized, that they were being inundated with frivolous complaints that were only meant to target politicians. This, more recently, yesterday, during a meeting of the North Dakota Ethics Commission, Commissioner Murray Sagsveen, the commissioner who is currently seeking reappointment, he suggested or he proposed penalizing complainants who file frivolous complaints, or if the commissioners conclude that the complaint was filed in bad faith. We have an article explaining that issue more in depth on our website, NorthDakotaMonitor.com, that was written by my colleague, Mary Stoyer, yesterday.
Enjoying my conversation with Jacob Orledge. He's a reporter for the North Dakota Monitor, and he has been closely following the issue of the Ethics Commission here in North Dakota. Questions relative to legal interpretations and the broader question, who holds power over ethics and how should it be used here in our state? Some people worry that penalizing complainants then, or those who file complaints, could discourage legitimate whistleblowers, while others say it protects the system from political abuse. Why have an ethics commission if concerns can't be brought forward? What are the competing concerns here?
Some lawmakers have expressed sentiments to me suggesting that they worry this system will be used to target specific lawmakers based on politics rather than ethics, good faith complaints about ethics. It's hard for the public to determine whether that political weaponization is occurring or not, because all of these complaints are confidential. Everything from the first complaint when it arrives at the Ethics Commission to the investigation to the response from the to the official being accused to the final report. It's all confidential unless the commission finds an ethical violation has occurred and all appeals have been exhausted. So we as the public do not have access to the complaints being filed. We as the media, we as the public, we have no way to evaluate that for ourselves. All we know is that public officials that are regulated by the Ethics Commission have expressed this as a concern, that the system will be weaponized or is being weaponized.
Commissioner Ron Goodman raised worries about how other agencies like the Attorney General's office might react. Could this proposal, Jacob, trigger a bigger showdown over the commission's authority?
There is that potential. I believe what Commissioner Ron Goodman was referring to there is that several executive branch agencies have questioned whether the North Dakota Ethics Commission has the power to penalize people if it finds if the Ethics Commission finds that person has violated an ethical rule, a state law, or the Article 14 of the North Dakota Constitution. That is still an unresolved question as to whether the Ethics Commission has that power, because while the Attorney General's office and the Governor's office have submitted testimony to the legislature claiming that the Ethics Commission does not have the power to penalize or fine the officials it oversees, the North Dakota Ethics Commission maintains that is an inherent power granted to it by the Constitution, by Article 14 of the Constitution, when it is given the power to make ethics rules and investigate violations of those rules and related state laws and the Constitution.
You've reported that some officials are asking whether the commission has clearly defined its lane. You've talked about how they kind of have reached that process through years of discussion. After all of that time, is the purpose and power of the commission unsettled still?
I think it would be fair to say there are still ongoing discussions and there are still ongoing deliberations about that, both within and without the Ethics Commission, regarding its mission and how it goes about pursuing that.
What about public perception here? We're clashing over appointments, authority, penalties. Do you believe that now public confidence in this system is maybe shaken a little bit, or at least not shaped as one would hope?
I think that's a very interesting question, Craig, and I'd love to know the answer.
There'll be more reporting about this, Jacob. What is next? Are there key meetings or more decisions or even legal actions that we talked about that listeners should be watching for?
I think the immediate next step that listeners should be listening for is what happens with Commissioner Murray Sagsveen. Will he choose to step down from the Ethics Commission as Governor Armstrong expects him to do? Will he choose to stay on the Ethics Commission? And if he does choose to stay on the Ethics Commission, what will be the next move from Governor Armstrong, the selection committee, the Attorney General? It's a very interesting question, and I think there will be some next steps coming down in the next few weeks and months.
Big picture, Jacob, before I let you go, what do you think this moment tells us about how North Dakota is navigating ethics, accountability, and even power in government?
I think those are some big picture questions that North Dakota and other states are still wrestling with. In North Dakota, the Ethics Commission is still relatively new, as I mentioned earlier, and the executive branch and the legislative branch are still trying to figure out where the Ethics Commission fits in and where the Ethics Commission is willing to fit in.
Are there any meetings scheduled, to your knowledge, Jacob, that will take these issues on in the short term?
There are no meetings scheduled at this time. I am expecting a special meeting of the North Dakota Ethics Commission in the relatively near future. I am also expecting a meeting of the selection committee, the governor, the Senate Majority Leader, and the Senate Minority Leader. That meeting will likely occur either next week or the first week of December. Thanksgiving, of course, complicates the scheduling around this time of year.
Well, speaking of Thanksgiving, Jacob, happy Thanksgiving to you. Our guest has been Jacob Orlich. He's a reporter for the North Dakota Monitor, helping us sort through the legal, political, and practical stakes and the future, I guess, of the North Dakota State Ethics Commission. If you'd like to follow Jacob's reporting, visit NorthDakotaMonitor.com. Jacob, thanks so much for joining us today on Main Street.
Thank you very much for having me on, Craig.
The Alzheimer's Association Minnesota North Dakota, with funding granted through the North Dakota Department of Health and Human Services Aging Services Section, is offering the Dementia Care Services Program. With classes offered at many locations in Minnesota and North Dakota, this month learn healthy living, building foundations of caregiving, and how to utilize the 24/7 helpline available in more than 200 languages. Learn more about the Dementia Care Services Program at alz.org/MNND.
This is Bird Note. Birder and author Christian Cooper says listening to birds helped him unlock a kind of superpower.
It's very exciting because it's like you have a sixth sense that most people don't have. You know, I'm walking through a park on my way to the gym. I am not looking or paying attention to birds, except I am, because I always am. And my ears are telling me, oh, the white-throated sparrows are back, just from hearing their call notes.
Birding by ear is a skill that takes time, but you'll start to recognize patterns. Christian says mnemonics are a great way to remember bird calls. Some birds have well-known mnemonics, like the, oh, sweet Canada, 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 of the white-throated sparrow, and
the flight call of the American goldfinch, potato chip, potato chip.
But if those don't work for you, make up your own.
One of the things I really love doing is making the connections, like I call the blue jay the Rihanna bird, because Rihanna has a song, Shut Up and Drive, where one of the parts of the song is where she goes, so if you want me, let me know, no, no. And I hear that, and I'm like, well, that's the same thing a blue jay does, what it's called. It's not just a flat sound, it drops at the end. So it's going, jang, yang, yang.
Looking for more tips on birding by ear? Start at our website, birdnote.org. I'm Jonice Franklin.
Here's Chuck Lura with Natural North Dakota.
Will you see a snowy owl this winter? My introduction to snowy owls came as a kid looking into a display case in a cafe and seeing a box of white owl cigars. I didn't see the real thing until I was in my 20s. I suspect that many kids these days see them first in a Harry Potter movie. But no doubt some North Dakota kids get to see the actual bird some winters. Snowy owls seem to elicit a sense of faraway lands, although perhaps not as faraway as those on a cigar box. Snowy owls, of course, are species of the tundra. So are lemmings, which are mouse-like mammals that are the main food source for snowy owls. For decades, this predator-prey relationship has been known to be closely linked, and a four-year population cycle has been well documented. When the lemming population is high, the snowy owl population increases. Then, when the lemming population drops, the snowy owls are forced to look elsewhere for food. As a result, large numbers of them are known to wander south into southern Canada and the northern states in search of food. However, snowy owls are rather regular winter visitors to North Dakota, although their numbers can be quite variable. Biologists have recently discovered that snowy owls do not wander south only when the lemming population is low. They may also move southward when the population is high, and they must search for new territories elsewhere. There's a good chance that at least a few snowy owls will show up in the state this winter. Look for them perching on utility poles, fence posts, or even on the ground as well. So be on the lookout for snowy owls this winter. And when the sun goes down over the next few days, be on the lookout for falling stars. The peak viewing period for the Leonids meteor shower is coming up this coming Monday night, the 17th and early hours of the 18th. Astronomers are predicting up to 15 meteors per hour during the peak viewing period. Plus, the Leonids are known for their occasional outbursts of meteors. And although the peak viewing period is past, the Taurids meteor shower is overlapping with the Leonids and will continue through December 10th. A thin crescent moon should make for good viewing if the sky is clear. So make a point of checking it out. I'm Chuck Lara.
Natural North Dakota is supported in part by the NDSU Central Grasslands Research Extension Center. You can get Natural North Dakota essays delivered to your inbox every week. Sign up for the email newsletter at prairiepublic.org.
Still to come on Main Street, News Director Dave Thompson and I will review the news and we'll visit the North Dakota Gateway to Science. What are blubber hands? That's ahead. Stay with us.
Extra, extra, read all about it. Gather round, everybody. I'm gonna tell you a story.
This is Main Street on Prairie Public, and it's Thursday. I'm Craig Blumenschein, and I am pleased to welcome back from a long-deserved vacation our news director here at Prairie Public, Dave Thompson. Dave, how are you?
I'm doing well, Craig. Yourself?
I'm doing well. How was that Cajun food in New Orleans there,
Oh, my
Dave?
Gosh. Marvelous. But I think my favorite probably was the beignets.
Okay. Dave, let's get to a review of recent news now. Lots happened since you were gone and since you arrived back home from your vacation. North Dakota State University, President Cook, well, he's taking a job at Iowa State. He's going back home, he says.
Isn't that interesting? He's a good one. I mean, Dr. David Cook took over at a time was very tense for NDSU. They were kind of ratcheting back budgets, and they were worried about some personal things. So he came in and kind of steadied the ship, and now he's leaving and going back to what he says is his home, and good for him. By the way, there are three different presidencies that are open in the North Dakota University system, and there are going to be a search for three presidents.
There are. Valley City's one of them, Dave. What's the third?
Bismarck State.
Generally speaking, I think that President Cook is well-regarded.
Yes, he is. And he came in about the same time as UND's Andy Armacost. They were both well-regarded, and Armacost is not going anywhere from what I've been told. So,
Dave, you've done some recent reporting in your newsletter, Do You Know DAC?, that a special interim committee reviewing North Dakota's five-year, $100 million per year rural health program. Health proposal may require a special session. What's the latest there?
Well, it's going to require a special session because it's federal dollars. They're going to be making some changes to Medicare and Medicaid and that type of services and the Health and Human Services Department. So the legislature and the governor are working out a plan, and the legislature will have a say in it before the governor signs it. But I also have a little update for you. They were talking about maybe January. There's some rumors going around that they may wait till March because there might be a few other things that the legislature might have to take care of. So we'll stay tuned to that one.
All right, Dave. Thanksgiving is nearly upon us. And of course, there was an important pardon in the state of North Dakota. What's up with that?
Absolutely. The annual pardoning of a turkey. Lieutenant Governor Michelle Strinden did the pardoning because the governor was out of town. It's a 40-pound tom called Reuben. And in our parlance, that's a big bird, for sure. Anyway, it's part of the event. The Turkey Federation donated 48 frozen turkeys to the Heaven's Helper Soup Cafe and the Abused Adult Resource Center in Bismarck. And that's something they do every year.
Keeping on the food topic, but a little different tact here for sure. The Great Plains Food Bank, Dave, continues efforts to meet what's turned out to be an increased need.
Oh, yes. And, you know, the governor came up with a plan to, they did transfer some money earlier than this, and to help out because of the SNAP situation. Well, SNAP benefits are coming back online, but the food banks are saying they don't expect that the demand is going to, you know, really go down anytime soon. Of course, we've got holidays coming up, Thanksgiving and Christmas, and of course, there's a lot of people who need that food assistance.
Dave, part of the bill that opened up the government, which restored SNAP benefits, also now has, I guess, presented hemp restrictions that will impact local businesses.
I find that extremely interesting. I guess these THC-infused beverages and the chewables, I guess, will no longer be legal. That's kind of interesting. And I think that there was some things that I saw online saying that they're concerned about, you know, what is it going to mean for them too?
And I know there was some work by folks in North Dakota to work with the legislature to allow hemp THC-based beverages, but I'm sure that will no longer occur. So
I know, and that's going to be interesting. And I'm reaching out to some of the legislators who brought that up during the legislative session, and we'll see what they're hearing and what impact it is going to have.
Dave, there's been some reporting on an oil leak along the Keystone Pipeline. A crack along a weld caused it, the company said. What do you know about that?
What I know about it is that there was a fairly large spill because 3,500 barrels, which translates to 147,000 gallons of oil, spilled in a farm field near Fort Ransom. Now, they're cleaning it up. They still have to clean it up, but pipeline has been repaired and oil is flowing through it again, but a weld apparently gave way, and that caused the spill.
Dave, Governor Kelly Armstrong has established now a new council to identify ways to prevent homelessness. What's up there?
Absolutely. Homelessness has become a huge issue. We have an interim committee of the legislature that's studying it. We have this new council to look at ways to help prevent homelessness. And then there are some local groups who are working on the homeless issue. And the legislative committee that's been studying it has said, we ought to be unified on this. You know, let's get a unified force and let's attack this problem as one and see if we can come up with the best practices to attack this homelessness problem. So it'll be interesting to watch. It's the Interim Human Services Committee, chaired by a state senator from Fargo. It will be interesting to watch how that will progress and how it works with the government agencies such as HHS and this new task force, how that's all going to work together.
It's a big problem here in North Dakota, so let's hope they find solutions soon. Monday, Dave, State Superintendent Kirsten Baszler, we've talked about this, will finally be leaving her post here as the North Dakota Department of Public Instruction Superintendent.
I know. That's extremely interesting. It's been coming for a while, and this comes at a time when there's a move by the Trump administration to dismantle the Department of Education. So there are some questions I still have about what is her role going to be, and is she going to be with a different department? Because the Trump administration would like to take some parts of the Department of Education and put them like in Commerce and some other departments. So it'll be interesting to see what role she is actually going to play at this point.
Dave, there's been reporting now from your staff here that health insurance hikes could face North Dakotans to go uninsured. Some numbers that I've seen says that number may be as many as 35,000 residents of our state. And boy, when you think about towns like Dickinson or Williston or Jamestown or Mandan, that's more than folks who even live in those larger communities.
That's absolutely right. And this is because of the subsidies for the Affordable Care Act. And the Congress, they've been trying to get Congress to do something about it. I don't know if that's going to happen at this point, but there's a lot of talk about it, at least in Washington and also among state legislators here.
There's a vote in Congress scheduled for mid-December. We don't know for sure what will be voted on and whether the Senate will take it up, but it certainly is a big, important issue for many here in North Dakota.
It certainly is, and there's been attempts to either change the Affordable Care Act or get rid of it entirely and replace it with something else, but I haven't seen any replacement at this point, so they may have to come up with a way to get these subsidies back in place at least for another year.
Dave, there's a new organization organized to promote tourism called the North Dakota Travel Industry Alliance. What's their plan?
Their plan is to, you know, basically go beyond the Convention and Visitors Bureau's people and get restaurants, hotels, attractions all together working as one to really strengthen North Dakota's message saying, come visit North Dakota. And they're looking for an executive director or a firm to help them out with messaging. Tourism's on board with it, the Tourism Department, which is part of, you know, the Commerce Department in North Dakota. They're on board with it. And it's important because a lot of people do not realize this, but it's always worth mentioning that tourism is North Dakota's third largest industry.
Dave, I know Thanksgiving's coming up, but you still have work to do. What are you working on?
We're working on how this new schedule of hearings is going to work with the new JetX line. That's that high-voltage power line that would run from Jamestown to Ellendale. And when the Public Service Commission normally holds hearings on that, they have, you know, a combined kind of like administrative hearing and then public comment. Now for this one, because there's been some controversy about JetX, because Ellendale is where you've got those data centers.
Sure.
And they're going to do kind of like technical hearings first, and then they're going to go to the communities where the line is going to go through, and they're going to hold public hearings there. So they'll get rid of all the technical stuff and then hear what residents have to say. This is going to be interesting because the hearings are scheduled for January.
As we always do, Dave, we'll look forward to your reporting. I won't have a chance to visit with you before Thanksgiving, Dave, but have a wonderful Thanksgiving, and we'll look forward to visiting with you after the holiday.
Thank you, Craig. You have a good one, too.
Gather around, everybody. I'm gonna tell you a story about a little fella.
If you're listening to the 3 p.m. broadcast of Main Street, catch up on the news and stories from around the world, the nation, and here at home on All Things Considered. That's up next on Prairie Public. And if you're listening to us during the evening broadcast, keep it here for The Middle Live. That follows Main Street on Prairie Public. Welcome back to Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Craig Blumenschein, and the North Dakota Gateway to Science believes that discovery doesn't stop when you leave the museum or even the classroom. Their STEM at Home series lets families explore science with simple experiments. I can't wait to learn about this one, including one called Blubber Hands, which I'm thinking of Fred McMurray and Son of Flubber now. So that simulates, of course, how Arctic animals stay warm and not flubber that we're going to throw around the room. Education Director Alicia Kellum explains how a life curiosity and a few household items can turn your kitchen into a science lab. Alicia, welcome back to Main Street.
Thank you, Craig.
Okay, I'm really off with Son of Flubber, right?
Right. Well, not so much.
All right, what is Blubber Hands and how does it demonstrate the science of insulation in cold environments?
This is a really fun one, and we've done it during our camps and clubs, and it's very easy to do at home. We definitely like to involve home in our scientific learning, and we have all kinds of stuff at home that can easily create experiments. So Blubber Hands came about because we were looking at animal adaptations. And that's one of my favorite things to teach during our workshops. And animals living in the coldest parts of the earth, especially in icy water, have to adapt. And I thought this would be perfect because it's starting to get chilly. Blubber is a special kind of fat that happens right below their skin. So it keeps the body heat in and keeps the cold out. So we found an experiment that can be done at home that sort of simulates that, and you can do some at-home experience with it. Blubber is usually found on seals and whales and walruses, anything that fishes in the coldest parts of our oceans. So I've made one because it helps me. You'll be able to see it, our listeners won't, but it helps me. So this
it looks
is
like blubber.
Easy.
Yeah.
It does. So what I've done is I have a Ziploc bag and I put some shortening inside, and that simulates blubber because honestly, that's what it is. It's a layer of fat, and it, you probably have some of this around home, especially if you make some yummy pie crusts. My grandmother used to make pie crusts with lard, and that's why they tasted so well. If I put my hand in another one so that I don't get shortening all over my hand, and I put my hand into the sack with the shortening, I suddenly now have created this layer of fat between myself and something cold. So what we like to do then is you can either hold an ice cube in both hands and see which hand you can hold it the longest in, or we submerge your hands in icy cold water. And it's amazing how well just a shortening layer can actually keep your hands warm. And that's basically what we are seeing in the world with these animals. So very, very easy thing to do, but very fun experiment to do at home.
And of course, the North Dakota Gateway to Science will market shortening layered gear for us to live here in North Dakota and be warm outside.
It's an idea. Yes.
So Alicia, of course, it's really cool for families to do hands-on experiments together at home, outside the classroom. There are just so many benefits. Tell us what you've experienced.
What I love is whenever we have families that come either to our gallery space or they come to our camps and clubs, and they will say, this was really neat. And we get to say, hey, do you want to know where we found it? Look at this website. Look at this free place that you can go and look for things just like this. What we then get is a lot of feedback, sometimes even pictures and videos. That's my favorite, of families interacting together and doing science at home. And that really, truly, it fills my bubble.
There might be. I might be one of these parents, although I tried. there could be some folks listening who are intimidated about, and I'm using air quotes here, doing science at home with their kids because, shoot, it's maybe been a long time since we were in school and maybe we forgot a lot about this stuff. What advice would you give to those parents?
Definitely Google it. Look on Pinterest. There are so many sites that have free ideas. You can even come to our website and we like to post some ideas for teachers and for families. It's so simple and so easy, and it gets your kids off the screens for a while and helps them understand science can happen right in your home.
It's a great way to plan for maybe a little more quality time during the holidays, for sure. Alicia, we also want to talk about the iClick Interactive Projector. The iClick Interactive Projector invites kids to jump, move, and explore through games that blend technology with physical play. With us is Education Director Alicia Kellum. She joins us here on Main Street to explain how interactive exhibits like this bring the North Dakota Gateways to Science's mission, which is to inspire discovery through hands-on experiences, to life. All right, I want to learn about the iClick Interactive Projector. How does it work, and what makes it such a hit with visitors?
This is one of my favorite new exhibits. I was very excited about this one. My gallery technician and I love the idea of adding technology that is not a screen. And so through the generous donations that were given through Einstein Online last year, it helped us add the iClick Interactive Projector to our gallery space for patrons to use, but also another one for our camps and clubs to use. So we're very excited about it.
So tell me how it combines movement and creativity and science learning.
Yes. So these are actually movable iClick projectors. They do have ones through iClick that are not movable, but we really wanted to make sure that we could utilize it all over in all spaces. And so it actually projects games and challenges either on a table or on the floor. And you could stomp, poke, use your hands and feet to answer the questions, to do the challenge. It has single player trivia, multiple player games so that you can try and beat your mom and dad. It can be moved to different parts of the gallery, which is one of my favorite parts. So we have the opportunity to actually make our own games. So we have questions that directly deal with the learning that you just did with an exhibit. And then you have a test or a challenge in front of you. And then we can move it all over the gallery.
In the museum space, there are new technologies, I'm sure, that cross your desk all the time. Cool features are exhibits. How do you decide what to invest in with all of the cool stuff that's coming our way?
It's hard. There are so many things every single day through emails, through phone calls, especially with AI and VR. It's difficult to kind of wade through. We really want to look at our exhibit space and what will enhance the learning and the fun for our visitor. And we knew that this was one of those things that, again, not only can be used in the gallery, but for camps and clubs. And we even want to look for ways to make it easy to take to different places. So we might even be able to offer it for workshops and for STEM zones. So that's what made this one stand out to us through all the ones that I receive every day.
Can you maybe give us a little sneak peek about some interactive experiences that are coming to the North Dakota Gateway to Science? Can you break some news for us here?
Well, absolutely. Right now it is set up with some pretty regular games, regular puzzles. We are going to be adding it to a space that is near one of our gallery favorites. And we are going to, I would like to create a leaderboard. And so it's something that we haven't done before, but can you do the learning? Can you beat the game? And then you get to put yourself up on a leaderboard for a month or 2 months, and you'll get to see if you are beating people from our community or from our visitors that come from outside. So giving it that gamified, I get very competitive. So we're wanting to gamify it and have some fun with it.
That's Alicia Kellum. She's the Education Director at North Dakota's Gateway to Science, shining a light on the iClick Interactive Projector. It's one of the many ways the center is turning curiosity into action in Bismarck. Alicia, tell us where you're located. We haven't been over that in a couple weeks.
Absolutely. We are at 1600 Canary Road in Bismarck, North Dakota. We're actually right on the edge of the BSC campus, and we overlook the Missouri River.
you're traveling, I guess, east on I-94 and you cross the river and you see this stunning structure off to your right.
That's
there
us.
You are.
Yep.
Thanks again for joining us on Main Street.
Thank you, Craig.
The Bush Foundation, in partnership with Strengthen ND, announces the 2025 Bush Prize North Dakota honorees. The Bush Prize is an annual award that celebrates organizations that are highly valued within their communities and have a strong track record of successful community problem solving. The 2025 Bush Prize North Dakota honorees are TNT Kids Fitness and Hip Hop and Hope. More information about the honorees can be found online at strengthenND.com.
This is Dakota Datebook for November 20th. In 1910, the polio epidemic began in the Northeast and spread across the country. It primarily affected children and caused widespread fear and confusion. There were no reliable treatments, and desperate parents sometimes turned to unproven methods to help their children. A number of odd and even dangerous treatments were suggested, including everything from prescribing vitamin C to administering electric shocks. Some children were injected with quinine and adrenaline. The Bismarck Tribune ran an opinion piece intended to calm what the author viewed as a historical overreaction to the epidemic. The information came from a bulletin published by the National League for Medical Freedom. The article referred to the infantile paralysis scare as if it weren't a serious threat and called it a moneymaker for the medical profession. The author questioned the sincerity of researchers developing a serum to cure the disease and claimed more polio victims got well from careful nursing and fresh air than from any other treatment. On this date in 1910, the Tribune printed a rebuttal by Dr. W. H. Bodenstahl. He called the opinion piece a direct insult to the medical profession and said it treated polio as a joke. He wrote that the author was either very ignorant or deliberately spreading false information. Bodenstahl asserted that, far from being a joke, polio had become one of the country's most dreaded diseases. He noted growing support at both the state and national levels for a well-funded Department of Public Health. Members of the National League for Medical Freedom, he said, opposed vaccines and lacked understanding of modern medicine. The 1910 polio epidemic was followed by others in the 1940s. The 1910 polio epidemic was followed by others in the 1940s and 1950s. These outbreaks had a major influence on the development of government health systems, increasing public awareness of the role government could play in preventing infectious diseases. With federal support, Dr. Jonas Salk finally created an effective vaccine to prevent polio. Today, the North Dakota Department of Health says fast and easy access to relevant and current health information is a necessity that facilitates a positive and progressive mindset and encourages community-wide approaches to better health. Today's Dakota Datebook was written by Dr. Carol Butcher. I'm Merrill Pepcorn.
Dakota Datebook is produced in cooperation with the State Historical Society of North Dakota, with funding from Humanities North Dakota.
Arts programming on Prairie Public is supported in part by the North Dakota Council on the Arts, a state agency developing, promoting, and supporting the arts in North Dakota.
And that wraps up this Thursday edition of Main Street here on Prairie Public. Thank you for spending time with us today. Remember, you can hear this and all past episodes of Main Street at our website or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. From all of us here at Prairie Public, we hope you have a great North Dakota weekend. Remember to tune in tomorrow at 3 p.m. Central for The Middle with host Jeremy Hobson. And at 7 p.m. Central, it's Science Friday. We'll be back on Monday, and we hope to see you again.